From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
My name is Ben, you're you, and when all of us join forces together, that makes this stuff they don't want you to know.
We basically form like Voltron. I'm the hat.
A Voltron, a shadowy Voltron that would appear on the X-Files, and today we're going to talk about something historical, something obscure, something that might be related to UFOs. And as you guys know, I'm really excited every time we can check out one of these episodes.
Something that was made into a film in the 2000s.
Well, has a title.
Yeah,
has
a title.
You know, this is something that has always bugged me and probably bugs a lot of other people as well. When they say the following events are, the following motion picture is based on actual
events.
Yeah, yes. Right? Like a Chainsaw Massacre is based on Ed Gein, I believe his name was, but very, 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 very loosely.
And the fact that they eat a lot of barbecue in Texas.
Oh, boy.
With those two things combined, they made the Voltron of movies that is the Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Yeah, how did we miss that in the cannibalism episode? That's a good point. This time, what we're talking about occurs in 1942 in the wee hours, February 24th. Technically, it's the 25th of February, 1 a.m. in L.A. Air raid sirens sound across Los Angeles County. And this was a signal for what was initially taken to be an attack by Japanese air forces.
Yeah, an attack over a populated area. So the authorities, they ordered a blackout through the entire or most of the county in that area.
To reduce visibility for bombers.
Precisely. Now, if I'm a bomber going over, I can't see exactly where I'm going now, or at least not as easily.
So then at 3:16 in the morning, the 37th Coast Artillery Brigade began firing 50 caliber machine guns and 12.8 pound anti-aircraft shells into the air at reported aircraft. The artillery fire continued into the night. Well, morning rather, the wee hours, let's say. Almost 1,500 shells were fired.
So pilots from the 4th Interceptor Command were alerted. This is very important, but their aircraft remained on the ground. So after about an hour of this intense shelling that Noel's describing, the all clear was sounded. The blackout order was lifted. It was 7:21 in the morning. This is a crazy day.
What's that about? Right? That's me. That's me if I'm, you know, awakened by this heavy artillery fire, and then you wake up in the morning and it's like nothing to see here. What? So what's going on?
Moving on.
We're going to get into it, but the tensions are super high for even civilians who are just living there in that area. And we'll get into why. But yeah, you can imagine this would be a terrifying moment being in your house as you're hearing this overhead.
I probably downplayed it a little bit. It would be a little more than what's that?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, when that latest, how unfortunate it is to say it this way, when that latest string of failed coordinated bombings occurred in New York, when that dumpster exploded in Chelsea, a lot of the New Yorkers interviewed were saying like, yeah, and they're closing down the road. I got stuff to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a buddy of mine was at Barnes & Noble a couple blocks away and said he just thought it was thunder, didn't think anything of it.
But yeah, then imagine that happening above your head approximately, you know, hundreds and thousands of times. Right. Those sounds, at least.
Exactly. So let's look at the aftermath. So wake up 7:21 a.m. You know, the lights are back on. People are wandering out to work, checking damage. Several vehicles and buildings were damaged by fragments, but shell fragments from the anti-aircraft shells, not wreckage from some aircraft. And there were people who died, but luckily, less than you would think, according to the official story.
Yeah, because of the blackouts, there were still vehicles on the road, and there were, I believe, 3 car accidents, or at least 3 fatalities involved with car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And there were also a few fatal heart attacks, or something related with the heart.
Two heart attacks, yeah. And the incident was front page news along the U.S. Pacific coast. It earned some mass media coverage throughout the nation in later days. And then people were asking exactly what you said, Noel, like, what happened? What the hell, guys?
Yes.
You know, it's 3 a.m. and they went to Uncle Sam.
So the Secretary of the Navy at the time, a guy called Frank Knox, held a press conference, and the message delivered to those in attendance was that this had been a false alarm due to anxiety and war nerves.
War nerves. Yeah.
Well, sure, war nerves because...
That's my quotation.
Thank you. I like that sound a lot. But this was contradicted by the Army the next day in a statement relaying General George C. Marshall's belief that the incident may have been caused by commercial planes, airplanes, that were being used as some kind of psychological warfare campaign to generate panic amongst the citizens.
Yeah, the Army initially stated there were possibly 5 light enemy aircraft launched from secret bases within California, Mexico, or from offshore submarines. Furthermore, there were thousands of on-the-ground witnesses, along with what would become a notorious photograph. And as we said, inevitably, media began to pick up the story. Some contemporary press outlets suspected a cover-up. In the Long Beach Independent, the editor wrote, "There's a mysterious reticence about the whole affair, and it seems that some form of censorship is trying to halt discussion on the matter, see?"
Skidoo!
Yeah, I don't think he said see at the end, but speculation was rampant, and there were several different theories about this, right?
So needless to say, there was a whole lot of speculation going on because these different statements didn't really give the general public a whole hell of a lot to go on.
Especially from 2 of the major military arms that are giving conflicting stuff.
Totally contradictory. And just the idea that something of this magnitude could happen, you know, as a result of nerves, that's pretty terrifying in and of itself. That would not put me in a very good state of mind when, as you know, Pearl Harbor had happened not terribly long before this, so people were probably already a little on edge about the potential of that happening again under the cover of night. And then the fact that their own government isn't giving them much actual information, I do not think that created a particularly confident public.
Right. So the speculation wasn't something relegated to the fringes of society. You know, it wasn't some group of people gathered in a smoky room with one light around them going, "I don't think the story was true." It's like the LA Times. It's like the newspapers of note. And so what were some of these theories? What was some of the speculation?
Some of these musings?
Yes, some of these musings.
Why don't you give them to us, Ben?
I will. I will play this reindeer game. First, there were theories, as we mentioned, about stuff like a secret base in northern Mexico. So not in the U.S., but on the continent, right? Because logically, be very difficult to smuggle in the requisite hardware to create a secret military base.
But that was an idea, wasn't it?
And that was one of the ideas, yeah. And then there is something else, the idea that there were Japanese submarines stationed offshore with the capability of carrying planes, which sounds so, from a technological standpoint, amazing, right? But as you can imagine, is still pretty difficult to do. And that was compounded by the fact that a Japanese submarine did surface off the Pacific earlier before, so people were pretty spooked about it. Others speculated that the incident was either staged or exaggerated, a false flag attack, perhaps, to give coastal defense industries an excuse to move further inland. So that's a corporate motivation, you know, profit and safety motivation. But this went all the way to government officials calling for a congressional investigation.
A representative from Santa Monica, congressional representative Leland Ford, called for an investigation, saying, quote, "None of the explanations so far offered removed the episode from the category of complete mystification. This was either a practice raid or a raid to throw a scare into 2 million people, or a mistaken identity raid, or a raid to lay a political foundation to take away Southern California's war industries."
So you're saying you think it's some kind of raid?
It's some kind of raid, but for what? I don't know.
So what happened?
Well, we'll get to that after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. Even in the modern day, or we're recording this in 2016, even in the modern day, you will hear several different theories regarding what really happened. I'm loving that finger quote sound effect, Noel. It's perfect. What really happened in those late hours in 1942.
The most popular alternative theories today involve either a Japanese covered-up attack that, you know, they were embarrassed about, they didn't want to admit, or the emergence of some kind of top-secret aircraft, you know, something that came straight out of Nevada somewhere in a secret test facility, or that perhaps these were extraterrestrials, maybe not, maybe just the UFO, but, you know, that alien specter remains.
When I first saw the idea that, like, it was they would cover up a Japanese attack, I was like, that's ridiculous. Why would you keep your citizens in the dark? But you make a good point. Maybe they didn't want to admit that they got.
Yeah, again. Yeah. No, really. That's legitimate.
So if this turned out to be true, it would be not only an astonishing moment in U.S. history, but one of the largest cover-ups in recent history as well. There's an important note that I'll reiterate here. As you guys have pointed out, this occurred very soon after the Pearl Harbor attack. Pearl Harbor occurred on December 7th, 1941. This occurred February 25th, 1942. So, as we've pointed out before in this show, civilians, military officials, and the media alike believed the West Coast would be the next target. The day before this attack occurred, a Japanese submarine had surfaced near Santa Barbara. So there are all these anti-aircraft batteries along the West Coast. They were on high alert. They were told to be ready at any given moment, told to be on the lookout for anything unusual. And they were working as active stations, ready to fire at any moment. And they were taught that they were supposed to expect an attack at any moment. These people were assured that something terrible was going to happen. And psychologically, we'll see that that's very important and could be a deciding factor. Let's look at those three most popular theories about what happened. And when I say popular, I don't necessarily mean the one that Uncle Sam accepts, because there is one that Uncle Sam believes is the official narrative. So what's the first one?
So Japan did, in fact, have a secret air-based weapons program in the U.S. during WW2. It was called the Fugo Bombing Balloons.
Like actually, like balloons?
Yeah, yeah. So their existence was kind of kept under wraps until a balloon bomb killed six people having a nice picnic in Oregon. But if these balloon bomb devices had somehow reached Los Angeles, neither the U.S. nor Japan have any records to show that this was the case. But, again, double but, these were only launched against America from 1944 onwards, so far as we know.
So that would mean that there's a problem with the timeline, right? If this attack occurs in 1942 and everything we know about these bombs says that they don't exist until 1944, then they couldn't have had it. But there's another kicker here. They weren't the only other army with this sort of plan. The United Kingdom was using a similar tactic and earlier. So their first evaluation of whether these bombs could be used on balloons occurs in like 1937. So in 1942, the concept of some sort of balloon weapon, as silly as it might sound, was definitely around. It was like in the zeitgeist. Governments were thinking about it.
So just to kind of paint the picture here, these are pretty interesting, you know, by today's standards, rudimentary bombing devices. It's basically a hydrogen balloon with a series of cords or wires or ropes attached around the midsection of the balloon going down to a point. Then there's a ring with the payload, I guess you could say, in the center, and then a series of sandbags around it. And Ben, you were saying that there were different regulators, altimeters, I believe, that could determine what altitude the balloon was in, and then cut cords for sandbags to get it to go higher. Mm-hmm. And then once it reached a certain altitude, it would release a charge that would drop the payload.
Right. Yeah, it was on a timer system. So after it, if it went too high, it would vent hydrogen, so it would descend, drop sandbags to ascend to keep it in this range of altitude. And then when it hit its timeline, then it would drop everything, including the bomb. So very clever. It does seem a little rudimentary in our modern age of drones.
But, hard to target.
Right, right. Hard to target. And not necessarily effective in the larger scheme of war, but a small number had been recorded, right? And they were, and even some were shot down by fighter aircraft. But there's a worrying thing about these is that they had a high altitude and they had a surprisingly fast speed. That was the main difficulty for fighter aircraft. So it is possible that a weaponized balloon could have been there, but there's another theory while we're on balloons.
So speaking of these balloons, the U.S. official position is that these were UFOs. They're unidentified flying objects, but they were, wait for it, stop me if you've heard this one, meteorological balloons, weather balloons.
Oh, weather balloons making a return appearance.
And swamp gas.
Yeah.
No, it was just weather balloons.
There were swamp gas and weather balloons. Yeah. And this comes from a little bit more recent, circumstances. Almost 50 years later, the Office of Air Force History concluded that
a careful study of the evidence suggests that these meteorological balloons, known to have been released over Los Angeles, may well have caused the initial alarm. This theory is supported by the fact that anti-aircraft artillery units were officially criticized for having wasted ammunition on targets which moved too slowly to have been airplanes.
So weather balloons were released from each of the approximately dozen anti-aircraft positions around the city every 6 hours. And if we look at this from a unpacking or slightly... If we look at the timeline and sequence of events, here's what we find. So these balloons, these weather balloons, they say, were illuminated from below by an enclosed candle and was designed to reflect off the silver lining of the balloon to ensure that you could see it. So reports suggest that the gunners from all but one battery mistook the balloons for planes and opened fire. Sounds like the old argument of incompetence versus malevolence, right? So
again, though, we got to think of the mentality of the time where people, you know, were understandably on edge. And as you said, there was this, this overarching idea, this notion that an attack was imminent,
right?
You know, and I'm not making excuses for anybody. They should be trained and they should be able to react accordingly. But I don't find this particular explanation to be too much of a stretch.
It also has to do with communication that's occurring between the different arms of the military. Like, depending on who released the balloons, if it's Army personnel who are shooting at these things, but it's Air Force personnel that released the balloons, or, you know, naval personnel, and there wasn't good communication about when they're being launched and where.
And it may even go further. That's a good point, because these anti-aircraft positions were probably not communicating very well with each other. So the only gun battery that did not fire was the D battery of the 203rd Coast Artillery Regiment. And that was also directly in the flight path of this alleged aircraft. This was also the company that most recently launched its balloons at 3 a.m. Remember, the firing starts at 3:16. And afterwards, the staff at D Battery were instructed not to mention these balloons, and the officer in charge, Colonel Ray Watson, was given a pension. Which this could make sense, and that means it would still be a cover-up, but it was a cover-up to avoid embarrassment.
Yeah.
And furthermore, why the question is like, well, why did this go so crazy then? If it was just a weather balloon, why did everybody end up shooting it?
Yeah, why didn't somebody say, stop, stop?
That's a balloon. Or why didn't the balloon pop? That's a heck of a question. So many of the shell bursts, for people who believe this story, including the Navy, many of the shell bursts were mistaken for other aircraft. And so this would lead somebody at a different battery position to say, oh, crap, got to get this one
okay.
too.
Okay, so I shoot one shell into the air. It explodes. Noel sees it. And he thinks, oh, what the heck was that? He shoots.
Right.
And then it's just this fun little cycle.
That's just how I roll, man. I shoot first and ask questions later.
No, you shot second, buddy.
Han shot first.
Okay. All right.
And this shows the wildly, this shows, you know, this could explain, rather, the wildly fluctuating reports on the number of aircraft, the speed, their altitude. And then we get to my favorite of these theories.
The UFO. Now, Ben. Now, Ben, that's misleading.
It could just be...
could be a lot of things. Could be more of a bing, bing, bing. Nah, things didn't really bing back then.
Sounds like a ship bing? To me. Like an old sailing vessel.
Sure, sure.
I like the... I like to think that's the noise it makes as it flies through.
Or it could be the classic...
Oh, yeah.
The quotation
tiny fingers. Wings.
So here we go.
Yeah. What's the deal with this? What? I mean, I couldn't the balloon, as you mentioned, already be considered a UFO?
Excellent point. Excellent point. Because every time we do this, we will get letters. We'll get letters from folks who will write in and say, this is definitely an extraterrestrial or this is not. And it's because we'll use the phrase UFO. But UFO stands for, as we all know,
unidentified
flying
object.
Yeah, unidentified flying object. And that's exactly the point that Noel is making. A balloon that you don't recognize as a balloon is a UFO until you say, oh, that's a balloon. An alien spacecraft is a UFO because if one appears, people will have no idea what it looks like or what it is, and it will behave differently, we would assume, mm-hmm. especially if it's spaceworthy. If there is a secret spy plane, like the B-2 bomber or something, then that is also a UFO. If there is a Horton Ho 22, which is the fixed wing aircraft that the Nazi powers were working on before the fall of Nazi Germany, if that thing's in the air, that's also a UFO.
Or even a larger, like nowadays, a larger drone that sure. perhaps you don't know exactly what it is, that could be a UFO.
Yeah, or one of those creepy surveillance blimps too, ugh. Which are a real thing. So, those who believe the incident was caused by an actual yet unidentified craft have several pretty valid questions for the people who buy the balloon story as well as the people who sell the story. Number one, which I jumped the gun on earlier here, wouldn't a balloon pop when you hit it with an artillery shell?
You'd certainly think so.
Right. The ufologists argue that a balloon subject to shelling would have popped, but there's evidence from other comparisons we can make that might be less certain than you would think. Kind of similar to how in the movies, anything happens to a car and it explodes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Giant fireball.
Yeah.
Of destruction.
And it's really difficult to make cars do that in real life. You have to know what you're doing, and it's not just shooting at a gas tank most times. So
wasn't there a Mythbusters on that?
Yeah, I think there was. Yeah. And then there's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Mac and Charlie throw a grenade into the car yeah. because they think it'll explode, and it just really messes up the
now,
car.
Now, what about that old – not to get too off yeah, topic here. What yeah. about that old trick where you take a rag, soak it in gas, put it in the gas tank and light it like a fuse and then run away?
That can work.
I would think that'd be a good
idea. That can work, yeah.
That was not what happened here.
That was not what happened here.
And don't ever do that.
No.
So we have to draw comparisons to the closest thing that we have at the time. So at the time, there were also Zeppelin type airships, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be another kind of balloon similar to. So these rigid and semi-rigid aircraft are not like the Fugo balloons that we're talking about because those relied on over pressure to sustain their shape. But
so yeah, if anything punctures it, it's gone.
Well, if anything punctures it, it won't necessarily pop immediately.
It'll just,
yeah, it might deflate and slowly go down. The flexibility of a balloon or a blimp's gas bag gives some protection from explosive fire. The skin will dent and distort to absorb the impact and may not actually puncture.
Mm-hmm.
We see experimental spy blimps like the one I mentioned earlier, the LEMV, may be able to sustain damage and not be shot down immediately. And also to that point about cars, it's not guaranteed that something even hydrogen powered will, or hydrogen filled rather, mm-hmm. will ignite when hit by normal bullets. In World War sure. One, and this was on this was a pretty interesting comparison I found on a site that believes this is the case. During World War One, a Zeppelin called the L-33 was hit by anti-aircraft fire, but it didn't catch a flame. Instead, it just was forced to crash land.
Wow.
And so the way that fighter aircraft began to be able to really light up a Zeppelin is when they switched from normal ammo to explosive and phosphorus incendiary mm-hmm. bullets. So a combination of these would ignite the hydrogen. So it's possible, according to the people who believe this part, that shrapnel from the batteries would not have destroyed the balloon, but would have punctured it, goes into the ocean. But that's not a guaranteed explanation. The second question for the UFO folks, right, for those who believe in the UFO theory, why does that famous photo that we mentioned earlier show a saucer rather than a spherical shape? Because if you look at the photograph, it definitely does not look like a weather balloon.
Yeah, but it also kind of looks like a saucer, right? I mean, that's one of the big things here. Like, the shape looks a bit round of whatever's being illuminated, but it's also so overblown that it's really hard to get any type of shape out of it unless you mess with the photo a lot.
I'm looking at it now, and I mean, there's a whole bunch of searchlights trained on it, and if it was a weather balloon, like we said before, those can be quite reflective. I could see it definitely a grainy photo like this having some issues with perspective, you know? It does look a little more oblong, but maybe we're seeing the top of it, you know? Maybe we're just like, the perspective is everything. It's interesting, though. It's a neat picture. It does. It's a very compelling picture.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if we're able to see exactly what it is.
So this photo that we're discussing here is pretty famous. There are several versions of it that have been retouched over the years. It appeared in the LA Times. But, you know, it's very common when you take a photo like this and then you want to put it in the newspaper, so you take it to the print, right, the big press. It's very common, or it was and it still is today, to retouch photographs to make sure you get the best image that you possibly can that'll look the best in that black and white format. And we even have a quote from the LA Times with an update about this photo.
In the retouched version, many light beams were lightened and widened with white paint, while other beams were eliminated. In earlier years, it was common for newspapers to use artists to retouch images due to poor reproduction, basically 10 shades of gray if you were lucky. Thus, my conclusion, the retouching was needed to reproduce the image. But man, I wish the retouching had been more faithful to the original. With our current standards, this image would not be published, and that's a statement by Scott Harrison over at the Times. So altered, but not altered to deceive people.
Not necessarily, but still, they're putting white paint onto the image,
it's
right?
Like I said, I mean, it's a super compelling photo. That white paint acts to great effect. I mean, those beams of light are super stark, and they're all kind of converging on this form in the sky. And, I mean, it looks like a saucer shape, sort of like an elliptical-shaped thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could see how people could definitely latch onto that. It's a very, very cool, compelling image. But I can also see just the idea of taking that paint and making it more, you know, pop kind of more. I mean, we're used to that now, even with like Instagram. You can have a 4-year-old take a picture and slap an Instagram filter on it, and all of a sudden it looks compelling. But this is very interesting for the time.
So yeah. This is a representation of what happened. We know that there were a ton of human beings, probably, I mean, I can imagine some people are outside looking up, or at least in the window looking up, as they're taking shelter from all this noise. What did witnesses say they saw?
So you'll hear people who want to push their own agenda, whether they believe it was a weather balloon, whether they believe it was some kind of craft, whether they believe it was nothing. There's a bad habit people can sometimes have wherein they will say, okay, out of these 10,000, out of these potentially 2 million people, the 480,000 who say that they saw this are the ones who are clearly right, because that's what I believe. Mm-hmm. So also, as we know, there are multiple accounts from the evening that widely contradict one another. And unfortunately, eyewitnesses are incredibly unreliable. So there are many, many eyewitnesses who say they saw some sort of saucer-shaped thing that was flying in a way they had never seen a craft fly before. There are many, many eyewitnesses who say that they saw multiple things fighting in the air, a war between humans and aliens, or war between the Japanese and the Allied forces, or the Japanese and the U.S. at this point.
We should throw in there really fast with the multiple aircraft and multiple things fighting in the air. The military, they were using tracer ammunition. So you could see the bullets flying through the air, and you can imagine what that might look like to an untrained eye.
Sure.
Just all these beams of light essentially going across.
And so here we are toward the modern day. The current official stance here in the U.S. remains the same as the 1983 investigation concluded. And that stance is that tensions were high, people had war nerves, and routine meteorological or weather balloons deployed around 3 a.m. prompted an attack because the city was already on high alert with the air raid siren going off at 1. However, it's not likely the American public will ever consider this entirely solved, regardless of what the government says. Unless more evidence emerges, we're stuck with an official explanation that many people think is malarkey. Or at the very least, murky.
Malarkey.
Malarkey, yes, oh, wow. Malarkey. And there are still lasting consequences to this, regardless of what you are convinced happened, and regardless how many people do or don't agree with you. One of the lasting consequences which stays today is accelerated state discrimination against innocent American civilians, particularly in this case, Japanese American residents at the time. The U.S. government was already actively interning people. And detaining them would be a good word. And this also descends down to the modern day, when we have people with legitimate concerns that one day a federal power will simply decide that they are a risk, and then boom, bag over your head, shipped you off somewhere. And that belief is a result of occurrences like this. But I have to ask you guys, what do you think? No.
Certainly think it was one of the, in my opinion, one of the coolest pieces of the past dealing with the UFO, just because of that image. I think that image, like you said, Noel, it's everything. It conjures so many other thoughts in my head about what it would be like if an extraterrestrial craft descended on a city, and like, how do we react in that immediate moment if one comes down and the military is ready to go already?
When the government response was so overtly shady and just like non-informative, you know, it allows your mind to kind of run wild a little bit, especially when you pair it with an image like that.
Well, it's also the immediate response of shooting the absolute crap of whatever it is that's overhead before confirming what it is. We don't know what it is in the sky, but it's in our airspace, and we have all these weapons, so shoot that thing down.
Well, that happens today, though.
No, that's what I mean. But that's a very human thing, I think, of you're encroaching on my territory. We're already at war. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you shouldn't have been there. Sorry.
There's also the inherent distrust. Imagine when you're a kid, if your parents tell you two completely different things, right?
Yeah.
What happened to our dog? Oh, he's at the doctor. No, don't trust your dad. He's dead.
Or at the farm. That's what I heard.
Right. Yeah. At the farm, at the dead dog farm. So with this in mind, we want to hear your opinions. What do you think happened? Do you have new information that you think should come to light? Do you know someone who witnessed this? Maybe a parent or a grandparent or something. And if so, what is their account of the events? We're going to head out now, but in the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode, of course, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love it if you left a review somewhere.
Not only that, I want to point out that we haven't been doing Shoutout Corner quite as much lately, and that's because we are amassing a veritable treasure trove of shoutouts that will get their own episode.
That's true. That's true. And if you have written to us on Facebook, Twitter, or email, then you may well be in that episode with stuff that your fellow listeners need to know. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff HSW. We're on Instagram as Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can find every single podcast we have ever done at our website. Let me take a breath. stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
And if you don't want to do any of that stuff and you still want to contact us, shoot us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.